let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. On today's program, our guest is acclaimed author James B. Flaherty. His popular romantic fiction novels, The Role of a Lifetime, a woman reinvents herself for good and bad, and Claire, wife, mother, mistress, murderer. The Role of a Lifetime is about a young woman who is a nobody from nowhere. She reinvents herself, marries a princely man, lives an extravagant life, overcoming tough hurdles. A story about having the guts to overcome the ability to re-identify yourself. A story about love and death, loss and redemption. Ultimately, a story about the brilliant and enduring strength of women's friendships. James' second novel, Claire, is about a very different kind of woman, Claire O'Brady Glickman. She had it all, beauty, brains, money, moxie. Men adored her and wished they could have her. Women admired her and wished they could hate her. She was, as they say, to die for, and then someone did. Jim Flaherty says he's one of the luckiest, healthiest senior citizens in the world, a native of Coral Gables, Florida. Graduated from Michigan State University, a degree in communications, went to New York City for $3,400 a year. That was $200 a month take home after taxes. You know, he's poor, but because he really loved to get up and go to work his entire life, ended up living an extraordinary life with beautiful homes, even a villa in Acapulco. Jim is award-winning advertising writer, creative director in New York, and probably Buenos Aires as well. Returned to the U.S. and created and managed, was the innkeeper, for a legendary four-star country inn and conference center. He sings in the choir of a Presbyterian congregation in mid-state New York, where he lives in an art-filled converted barn, and he's our guest on This Week in America, James Flaherty, author of The Role of a Lifetime and Claire, with us via Skype on This Week in America. Jim, a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
I sound fascinating.
You really are, and these books are excellent and doing quite well, and it's going to be fun to talk about them during the course of the program. But let's start with everything that you've done. Maybe one of the original Mad Men. I mean, you've had such a great life. Why did you decide to start writing? How did this all begin for you?
From the earliest days, I think I'm like Isaac Asimov, the great intellectual and writer, who said, if my doctor said, Isaac, you only have, or Jim, you only have 6 minutes left to live, I wouldn't brood. I would just type faster. And Faulkner said it even better. He said, read everything, read trash and classics and good and bad and see how they do it. And then it's just like the carpenter who works as an apprentice and studies the master. You know, you read, you absorb it, then you write, and if it's good, you'll know it, and if it's garbage, you'll toss it out the window.
Well, so you know what's good then, because you've done that with these two novels that we're talking about. And why did you decide to write fiction with all the knowledge that you've had, New York City, advertising, such an extraordinary life that you've led? Why did you decide to go the fiction approach?
Since I earned my living writing about goods and services, whether it was the Avon Lady or British Airways or Smirnoff Vodka, I wondered if I could sell emotion too. So I studied, I watched the magic of Aaron Sorkin's The West Wing, the best thing ever written for television.
Exactly.
And I thought, if I could do that, I'll give it a shot myself. And what's nice is it's fiction, and even though it's created by me, I always felt the characters in my books have the strongest influence on the story. You know, often when writing, I've heard one of the characters say, you know, wait a minute, Flaherty, you know, I would hate doing that. And so I would change the directions. I mean, there's birth and death. It's fiction. There's birth and death and romance and sex when necessary, although it's not the driving force of the book. There's Broadway and some international travel, marriage, divorce, some sadness, some happiness. I reread one of my own novels recently and was pleased to find myself teary-eyed in sections and laughing out loud in others.
That's the mark of a good novelist, when he reads and is moved by his own work. And with us on the program is a good novelist, James Flaherty. two books out there, The Role of a Lifetime, A Woman Reinvents Herself for Good and Bad, and Claire, Wife, Mother, Mistress, Murderer, both books available at Amazon. Link on by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And part of this is sex. You mentioned that when necessary in the story. Talk about incorporating that. For some authors, that's rather difficult. They don't want to go overboard, although some do. Talk about that, the right balance where it moves the story along, but it's still believable.
In the beginning, I really didn't want to have any sex in it because basically there's an old prudish streak in me. I don't know where in the hell it came from, but I know it's there. But I was writing about contemporary women, and you can't have a contemporary woman who's going to go through life and do wonderful things unless she's Mother Teresa and not have some intimacy in her life.
Yes.
So I found that intimacy became part of it. In moments, it became very strong. I know one of my best girlfriend chums from advertising, because I've known brilliant, talented, beautiful women for years out of advertising, thank you, and said, I had no idea you were so knowledgeable about sex, Jim. And I said, well, I'm not, but my characters were, and I learned quite a bit from them. I'm sorry that I'm too old to practice what they preach, but I must admit it was fun writing about it, though.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. It's maybe not something I did, but I'm going to see if Gordon can get away with this, and I can sort of vicariously live through him as we're doing this. And you mentioned, and I love that in your books, strong women. Talk about the focus on women, because I love the characters that you've created in your novels.
I was very fortunate, I think, growing up in the advertising business professionally, because advertising was the first, if you want to call it a profession, other than the oldest profession, and we all know what that is. They were the first ones to say, hey, she's as smart. No, she's smarter than him. And they would make her come to the front of the line or put her in the corner office.
Yes.
So as a result, I've had brainy, talented, beautiful women in my life for years. If I had 7 writers working for me, 6 of them would be women, because I always thought that women could write better. And basically, I think, I hate to say it, I think that women are probably smarter than men, although God knows I don't want them all to hear me say that. At any rate, what I always admired about women is that better than men, they know how to create a circle of friends to support them and really move their life along positively. Men don't, because they're too screwed up, tied up with me and poor me and poor trauma. Yes. And drama and all that crap. But women say, help me, I've got a problem and I will listen to you. And I love that. And so in both novels, there is an underlying story about women supporting other women and what comes out of it.
It's there and it's quite obvious. The books we're talking about, The Role of a Lifetime and Claire, both books by James Flaherty, our guest on the program, books available at Amazon.com. You can link on by going to our website, This Week in America. And Jim just happens to have 2 copies that he bought. I'm sure that he got a discount.
I had to buy the damn thing.
And they're up on camera, and we've got them on the screen. By the way, the video portion of this up on our YouTube channel. You can go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, pull up video, and actually see Jim as we're talking here. I mentioned the strong women. Let's talk about the other side. What's your thought on villains? Do you have villains, create villains in your novels?
That's an interesting question, Rick. To me, I'm a great believer. I probably should have been a psychiatrist, because I know the real villain. Each of us creates a villain in our life, and most, you can meet him or her in your bathroom mirror tomorrow morning, because yes, that's who the villain is. It's me. You know, I'm the one. If there's somebody that's going to screw up, it's probably not the other person. It's me. So I think how you change roles from villain to someone you really like, that takes guts and honesty every day. But in my books, the heroes are women. They're gutsy, honest women. So there is no specific villain. There are villains. and they have to cope with them. And in some cases, they fall into the villain role themselves.
Yes, yes.
And have to work themselves out of it.
Well, the one character, Richard, who dies, and as a reader, you're like, he was a bad dude. He really had this coming. Then you're thinking, should I really wish that? I'm not going to say that out loud, but you've created some interesting characters on both sides, including the villains. You talk about laying yourself out there for this. When you write the novels, you get critiques, you get criticism, you get book reviews. What's that whole process been like for you?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I am not a well-known novelist who comes out with a book and immediately 250,000 people rush out and buy it, and therefore they write reviews. Like, I still think of Pat Conroy, how I used to read, rush to buy his books, or Elizabeth Gilbert, or there are 100 other authors. But now and then there is a review. One came out I thought was very interesting. I'd never had an official review. Where in the hell is it? It was called Pacific Book Review. And they said, "The Role of a Lifetime is a marvelous and inspiring tale of a woman who creates her own fairy tale. She maximizes her natural talents and becomes part of worlds she had only dreamed about. She finds herself on center stage and must navigate new challenges, including heartbreak and taking on new and unexpected roles. The author is a wonderful storyteller." Ooh, that's me, I guess.
Yeah.
"And has skillfully written romantic and amorous scenes, too, and has created male characters that will make readers swoon." And I thought, good God, I make characters to make you swoon? I haven't swooned in ages. Right. And there have been other reviews. People say, "I read it and I love it, and the sex was good, Jim." It really wasn't that all important. But the people that I like, they say, "I picked it up and I stayed up later because I had to read another chapter. I didn't want to put it down."
Well,
and that's I want to feel that way about the books I read too.
Yes, and that's a sign of a good book when it's like, okay, it's 1:30. I've got a meeting in the morning. Just one more chapter. Let's see where Jim's taking the Claire here.
Right.
Let's see what's going on. A couple minutes left in the program, going by way too quickly. What do you hope when people read your two books? The takeaway is, what feeling do you want them to have after reading these two?
Obviously, I want to entertain them. I wrote fiction. I mean, I'm not trying to sell them a new kind of underwear. I want the book to give them pleasure, and even the sad moments. And hopefully they will learn something, maybe about how to balance difficult relationships and family relationships. There's a lot of that in both books. Or learn something from exposure to a couple of foreign ports, specifically London and Ireland in these two novels, or get a hint of what life on Broadway is and what it's like, or what is rich living in Manhattan. You know, I would like them to think about the people and be glad that they were part of their lives for a while. And hopefully I'd like them to write me and tell me why, you know, Flaherty, you couldn't write an interesting suicide note, or, you know, "I really like what you write and I enjoyed it and I want you to write something else." I've had a few of those notes too.
Well, I'm looking forward to more of your work. You're a very gifted writer. Are you working on sequels? Are you working on new material at this time?
No, there is no sequels planned. Even though they're standalone novels, although I like them well enough to write more about them. Right now I'm writing I do have one other novel in the works, but at the moment I'm finishing up a kind of a memoir and a homage to and a self-help for the elderly. All my life I've always had older friends who helped me make the right professional decisions, people who helped me become me and made it good to be Jim. And I probably could not have done it unless I'd had these friends that were 20, 30, 40 years older than I to say, "Flaherty, don't be such a jerk and listen to me." And I now and then I hope there are a few younger ones that say, tell me, Jim, should I turn left? Should I turn right? You know, what the hell should I do? The next book is called Dear Old Friends, and that will be out in a few months.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that. You've got such a reservoir of information and of just living and doing so much. And I sort of feel like I know you from reading the books. And Manhattan is almost another character in the books, and travel, and the storylines in both books are so well developed. Let's just say a year from now. What do you think you're going to be doing a year from now? In fact, let's make an appointment. We'll talk again a year from now. And if I contact you a year from now for the program, what are we going to be talking about? What will your life be like?
I'm hoping that I'll be so terribly important. Yeah, that you'll have to really pay to talk to me. Never mind.
It's like, Rick, no, I'm so busy. Call me back.
You know what I hope a year from now or a month from now? I'm hoping that I need to find a literary agent to take me on and to keep me disciplined and maybe sell my books as I think both of them are good fodder for either a film or a TV series, because I tend to write, maybe it's my advertising years, I write in terms of sequences.
Yes.
Meanwhile, I'm just going to go on living. I was raised by the golden rule. My mother was a big believer in do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And I always thought, God, I hate the writing of that. I mean, lay that on a five-year-old. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And they'd say, huh?
Yeah, what?
So I rewrote it for my daughters, whom I love, and for myself. Five words. You get what you give. Generosity of spirit and a helping hand and a warm smile and a thinking mind and a heart that feels something, you get it back. If you give ugly and criticism and complaints, you're going to get bitten you know where. A lot of that comes back to you all the time. So I try very hard to come back and say every day, my mother said, you can wake up every morning and look in the mirror and say, good God, another day. Or good God, another day.
There we go. I like that.
I really try to do that every day.
Well, and you
try to get through it.
Get rid of undo. That sounds like a copywriter. I love that. And I got about 30 seconds here. Has that discipline of getting to the point of going back and probably reworking copy 1,000 times to get just the right words in the right position, not wasting any, making them all count, does that help as you're writing this? Sometimes you read novelists, especially first-time ones, they got a 1,000-page book that should be about 240 pages. Has that helped you, given you that discipline to get to the point?
Yes. I think maybe the most important part about writing is editing, is to go through it, but to go through it honestly and say,
yes,
you know, that really, good God, are you really that trite? Would you really say that? I sometimes want to say that to certain politicians, that I wish they did not speak in terms of such unbridled adolescence. I would like them to edit their language and say a little more of what they want. I don't know. Meanwhile, all I really can say to your wonderful listeners is read as much as you can. I mean, thank God for reading. I really try to get to bed by 9 or 9:30 every night so that I can read an hour before I go to sleep. And meanwhile, I thank you very much, Rick. I appreciate it. Again, I am James B. Flaherty, and you can call me Jim. And I hope everybody enjoys The Role of a Lifetime and Claire, Wife, Mother, Mistress, Murderer.
And both of those available at Amazon.
And they're both available on Amazon and on your Kindle also. And goodbye, Rick. And thanks for the memory. Thanks for the opportunity to chat with everyone.
Oh,
and Merry Christmas.
This has really been fun for us. And to get information on James Flaherty's books, you can go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, link on directly to Amazon. Jim, it's been a pleasure. Happy holidays to you. We will stay in touch. It's been fun. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Thank you, friend.
It has been a pleasure. James Flaherty, our guest on the program, The Role of a Lifetime, Claire, his two novels, and we're back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.